chased by McCarr. The dynasty will be denied, and a new legacy begins. They've reached the seventh, and the Avalanche are 2022 Stanley Cup champions.
Don't worry, everybody. 106 days until the NHL returns. We got lots to talk about until that day. It's the Fan Morning Show. Ailish and the other Cuthbert, Justin Cuthbert, joining us today. Get to hear the sweet sounds of your father's call to start your morning. How's that feel?
There you go. it's pretty good. I mean, he works hard on those calls, those Stanley Cup calls. He's only been able to do two in his career so far.
Wow, really? I would have thought way more.
No.
He's got the golden goal. He's been
chasing Stanley Cup just like the Colorado Avalanche. So
I
think he's gone two for two. we'll say that. It was a pretty good call. And I'm sure he's happy to be entering summer mode.
I love it. We are not entering summer mode. We have months and months to talk about it. But it's awesome to see this be a final kind of the hoisting of the cup, the summit, as you're lovely father put it. Colorado wins Stanley Cup last night. It just gives you so many good vibes to watch it happen. For me, there's nothing better than a Stanley Cup being awarded on the ice. Like seeing the guys be emotional, seeing everything that goes into it, celebrating. I wish it was on home ice. There was no all the small things being played, but an incredible night. I don't even know where to begin sometimes. You know, it's just like, how do you wrap that up in a 6 a.m. chat?
Yeah, a couple ways we can relate it back to the Leafs too, which I'm sure we will not be scared to do. But I don't know if I'm like just a huge nerd, but I still get chills when the cup goes up. Like every single one of them happens, and I get like a little chill, and it's just like, oh my god, I can't believe
this. Beautiful.
This still affects me the way it used to, which is awesome because those guys, just like the fans, turn into little boys celebrating it, breaking the cup, having laughs. Of course, beers are involved. It's awesome. It's like it's great to see it drop off such an intense cliff into something that is just children playing a sport and enjoying the fact that they just won a championship. It's great to see every year, as you mentioned, 106 days, you said, till the next game. It's going to be a long time before the next time we see a celebration, but it was pretty special seeing those two teams go at it, the guts. And of course, the glory after that, it was pretty cool.
Man, if we talk about the game just a little bit before we get into all the fun, lots of post-game media clips that we can play, a lot of stories that came out last night. We're also going to talk to Luke Fox later today, who was there on the ice while all of the chaos was happening. And afterwards, I'm sure he has some inside story. But yesterday's win, you got to see what a real defensive juggernaut of a team the Avalanche can be, just playing like champions for the rest of that game. I think they held Tampa to 14-plus minutes without a shot at one point. For me, it just showed like such a drastic range of Tampa being what I thought was showing lack of composure, very emotional, led by their head coach, of course, which isn't surprising. But to me, looked like they really lost that game last night. They got outpowered, outmuscled, and outclassed by Colorado. And there was really, for me, no doubt that when the Avs put that lockdown mode on, that they were going to win last night.
I love the contrast between two teams that defend leads so much differently. Like Colorado's defense of that lead in the third period, allowing, I think you mentioned, just four shots against. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just unrelenting. The way that they forechecked, the speed, the way they turned over the lines, limiting a team that's desperate for a goal in the chase for a third straight Stanley Cup to four shots in that final period. I think only two were at even strength, so I think two came when they were pushing for six on five. Like, that is a special, special performance. And we talk all about all of their offensive abilities and all that, the way that they can just suck the life out of a team, just like the Tampa Bay Lightning have done historically. And I was worried for a little bit, like it looked like Tampa was dragging Colorado into its world over the last four games, where it was getting what they needed to basically park the bus, get a lead early, and then just play that lockdown shot suppression, block shot
first
style
for the last four games.
Yeah, and they've had the conditions that they've needed. They've prevented Colorado. Oh no, in game three, I think Colorado scored early, but Tampa immediately got the lead back. So it was like really trending, despite what we saw from shift to shift, in the favor of the Lightning, and it felt like they were going to do it again at some points. But in the end, the Avalanche were just overwhelming. I think they shook out those nerves in game five, And the way that they played after they scored that first goal from Nathan MacKinnon down the stretch in game six was championship worthy.
I definitely want to get into Nathan MacKinnon's just the last couple games and how he established so much dominance. But you talk about the comebacks. They actually, the Avs were now tied from the series and the whole postseason for 10 comeback wins in a single postseason. That's tied for the most ever.
Just surprising, right?
Which is surprising because it seems like they always had that control and that, you know, that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it happened in the last four games.
It did.
Four straight,
it did.
Right?
But 10 comeback wins. How many? They only got four losses in this entire.
Mm-hmm. I think they matched the bet or the cleanest run in the salary cap era through
pretty
the
incredible
Stanley Cup. And, you know, they went through a literal dynasty mm-hmm. to do that, which mm-hmm. is, of course, very, very impressive.
Nathan MacKinnon, really, he was the heart and soul of this team. There's a lot of articles coming out, I'm sure, over the next couple of days of what it means to be a leader like him. I was so inspired just to watch his play over the last couple weeks especially, but he's also a guy that is super serious. He takes this game like it's the only thing that matters to him in the world. And for him to have some post-game chats where he was finally opening up and being a little bit more fun and talking about, he's a guy that doesn't eat one single cheat meal in his like his life, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's lots of jokes on Twitter being like, oh, he's going to have one carb tonight. But we actually have an audio clip of what he hopes is going to happen this summer. You know, he's very close to Sidney Crosby, of course. And throughout the playoffs, actually, there's multiple times where he commented that he's talking to Sidney Crosby during the playoffs, getting that, you know, veteran conversation about what it means to win the cup. But really special bromance between those two. And MacKinnon had a fun quote. We're going to play that now.
I've been the drunkest guy at two of his, so he better be drunk at mine. But it's cool. I have my name engraved on the cup with 87, my idol.
Oh, my idol. That's really cute. But yeah, he's saying finally he gets to have his own Stanley Cup party at home, and Sidney Crosby better be there and be the drunkest guy at his party.
Just Michelob Ultras, I assume.
Oh, yeah. The skinniest beer
MacKinnon.
Possible.
Yeah, just let's limit those calories per serving for sure. I almost think he takes it too seriously sometimes. Like, it was kind of working against him, it felt like, in this series, where he's just so tormented by the fact that they haven't won. And it just, like, you can see it building and building every shift as it doesn't go his way. Mm-hmm. And it took him a while to break out. I mean, he got that goal, was it game five, I guess?
The little bounce one.
Basically just went off his skate. And it's like, I don't even think that did. I think it helped, mm-hmm. but it didn't quench his thirst.
No.
Not even close. Like, he wanted to be the difference. And the fact that this was the Cale Makar story through... basically, through game five mm-hmm. of the Stanley Cup final and everything before that was all about Cale Makar. And, of course, he won the Conn Smythe trophy deservingly and recognized for his great performance. But the fact that Nathan MacKinnon was able to lead the cup-clinching performance, mm-hmm. scoring that goal, an assist on Arturi Lehkonen's goal, and he only scores big goals, I think that was awesome for the legacy of Nathan MacKinnon, who wanted this, I think, more than anyone mm-hmm. and comes up in a big moment in game six and provides he's deserved that one cheat meal, as you mentioned, that he's going to have this summer.
There's so much veteran leadership that isn't shown in what you do on the score sheet. And I'm actually really intrigued to see how Cale Makar grows into that. You know, he's what, 23 years old. He looked sometimes a little bit overwhelmed in the last couple weeks, especially how yesterday's game started.
Game six was his worst game, I think. Maybe the playoffs.
Yeah, it was tough. And I think that that moment is something you can't be trained for. You need to be in that pressure-filled moment and learn from it. So if Cale Makar can do what he's done over the last couple of weeks, Norris Trophy winner, Conn Smythe Trophy winner, Stanley Cup champion in 5 days, he looked extremely overwhelmed at times. And he's going to grow into that. He's going to grow into his own. He's going to take these experiences and become a leader and learn from all the players that are around him. I don't even know what his ceiling is. It's just, it's outstanding to see what we've seen from such a young kid so far. We'll talk about it, I'm sure, over the next couple of months about what mm-hmm. Cale Makar can be. But it's so much more promising to see all the people that he spends time with. Everyone that hoisted the cup last night and had a post-game interview talked about that team and the leaders and what it meant to play with some of these veteran guys. And if you're mixing that in with a young superstar like that, it's so impactful.
And think about what he checked off the bucket list this week. Wins the Norris Trophy, wins the Conn Smythe Trophy, wins the Stanley Cup.
That's so humble.
That takes pressure off you, too, for a career.
True.
Like, look at how much the last 10 years has tormented Nathan MacKinnon. Mm. Like, the pressure builds. If the Avalanche didn't win this year, I don't know what's going to happen to them this summer. I don't know if they're going to be as strong. I don't know if they're going to be back. But if you get those checked off early, like Cale Makar did, it opens you up and probably liberates you a little bit. It maybe that gives you the grounds to have your best career. Mm-hmm. And just look at his contemporaries at the NHL Awards earlier this week. Who were the other nominations for the Norris Trophy? Victor Hedman, Roman Josi. Guys 10 years into their careers. And it's Cale Makar who wins the award, but is 7-8 years younger than those guys, mm-hmm. and is doing the same things and has been recognized as having a superior season. And of course, had the best playoffs out of anyone in the league, unless you want to bring Connor McDavid back into the mix.
But yeah, Cale 29 Makar, points.
Unbelievable. An unbelievable player. And the fact that he carried his team so far, but that his team was able to pick him up in game six, kind of the perfect story to this playoff.
Exactly. And I actually thought really sweet move from him to bring his brother Taylor Makar up for the post game media. You know, Taylor was actually drafted by the Avs last year in the seventh round. He's still going to UMass, but we have an audio clip of that as well. The two brothers up on the podium and, you know, what it means for them to have shared this journey together.
It's insane for me to watch. He's the hardest working person I've ever known. So dedicated. It's so funny seeing us grow up together, have those sibling fights, battles, playing for fake Stanley Cups and mini sticks, and to see him finally be able to lift that. I know he's always wanted that, and something I've always wanted to be able to watch too. Just so proud of him and our family.
Yeah, so sweet. And you know, some of the questions fielded towards them were, will we see you guys both lift this Stanley Cup together one day? And it's not out of the realm of possibility. You know, I don't see Colorado not being in this conversation for the next 3-4 seasons in a row, depending on how this offseason goes. But you mentioned it. You win a Stanley Cup and there's that drive to let's run it back, right? There's a mm-hmm. couple people that are going to be UFAs. Maybe there's more drive for them to stay here, to do it another year, do it 2 more years. You saw what Tampa Bay was able to pull together in 3 seasons. I don't see Colorado not being in that conversation next year.
No, they definitely should be. I mean, if we pulled up the odds right now, I'm sure they would be the favorite to repeat mm-hmm. as Stanley Cup champions. I think Tampa will be right there as well. I mean, you mentioned the lure in coming back. Like, Andre Palat's an unrestricted free agent, but I don't know. I kind of feel like he'll take a discount to stay in Tampa Bay if the option's on the table, and he showed how important he is to the Lightning in this series. But yeah, the Colorado Avalanche there was pressure on this because things are going to change. I mean, Nazem Kadri's probably going to be out the door. Valeri Nichushkin could be out the door, although I think maybe there's a better chance that he comes back. But you go back 5 years, 2016-17, mm-hmm. the worst season in the salary cap era from the Colorado Avalanche. So this has been a 5-year build. And in that build, they have brought in so much elite talent, so many great players. They have taken advantage of other teams that have been up against the cap, that have needed to move bodies, getting Devon Toews for 2 second-round picks, Nazem Kadri in the deal that we all know, Nichushkin just off the street, basically. They've done such a brilliant job bringing in great talent, and they got to pay that talent, and of course that means things are going to change. But do we want our first Leaf parallel?
I have one as well. You go first.
Okay, so 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
McKinnon and Landeskog were around before those 5 years. But they realized on this team that they needed to be patient, that they needed to look at things a little bit differently, and they literally tore it down to the studs for that 2016-17 season. Now, I'm not suggesting Leafs tear it down to the studs, but you can try again.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Joe Sakic and his team was given license to try again, that's the reason why they're Stanley Cup champions. They could have easily, and if it wasn't for the fact that Joe Sakic is maybe the most famous player in the franchise's history, the legend of the Colorado Avalanche, if it wasn't for that name, he might have been out the door because he failed in his first attempt badly. Like, what they did early on was awful,
mm-hmm.
but he looked at things differently. He brought in help. He looked at the game a little bit differently, and everything they did since drafting Cale Makar has essentially been perfect. Like, every single move that they made has been perfect. So you can learn. You should be able to try again. And teams that are so quick to dismiss everything and everyone because they need to make a move, those are the ones that get themselves in trouble.
Just
so I don't know
for
if this,
a little patience.
This isn't a perfect parallel.
But I see where you're coming
But
from
then there's sure. the next one. There's Nazem Kadri. And where was the patience with Nazem Kadri? So the Leafs management desperate for patience right now. They're asking mm-hmm. for it, but they didn't give it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's one of the reasons why they're in a little bit of trouble right now. But I will say, if you stick to it, if you give up on something, then you're starting from scratch. You got to start over. Colorado Avalanche didn't give up on what they had in management with McKinnon, with Landeskog. And in 5 years, they turned it around. Pretty remarkable.
5 years is, that's, and two of those are pandemic years.
They won the President's
years.
Trophy last year, you're too. Right. So really 4 years. They were an elite team within 3 years.
That's, I can't think of a team that's done that that quickly. So you mentioned they're probably the best odds to repeat as champions. Well, they are. I just pulled it up. Plus 450 to win next year. Guess who's in second place?
It's got to be the Lightning.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Really?
Second odds, second best odds at plus 850. Tampa Bay, plus 900. Panthers, plus 1,000. Hurricanes, plus 1,200. And Golden Knights, plus 1,400.
Might as well put the Lightning in right now just because you know they're gonna not going to go away.
Yeah.
They're not. I mean, and they were saying it as much, too. Like, they expect to be back. I don't think they ran out of gas, and we're going to ask Luke Fox this. I don't think they ran out of gas as much as they just ran out of players.
And John Cooper says, if he said this last night at the podium, any other regular season time, they would have been playing with half their minor league roster. Half. This is always how it is post NHL playoffs. You're going to hear about injuries galore. And he said he doesn't even know if some of them will be public, but broken thumbs, broken ankles, people playing after surgery. Nazem Kadri on the other side had a custom glove made so that his broken or surgically repaired thumb wouldn't be smashed into pieces. It's just, it's obviously incredible what it takes to get to that level. But for John Cooper to come out on the stadium or the stage and say, we'd be playing with half our roster, you know, there's that taste in his mouth saying, if we could do that healthier, we could have beat this team.
And a part of all those injuries, I think, is the fact that they literally have just done this for the third straight
time.
Like, to play 23 postseason games. Postseason game is, I don't know, how much of a regular season is that? Like, times 2.5, maybe, in terms of, like, intensity. And the way that, you know, the readiness to pick up injuries and so on and so forth. Like, it's really taxing. And I think because they just simply lost players, they were reduced to a one-line team for the most part in this series. And to beat the Avalanche with one line and a great goaltender is probably pretty tough. But Stamkos, Kucherov, Palat, they were unbelievable in this series. They were the best line. They were better than anything the Colorado Avalanche put out there. But because Cirelli was injured, because Point barely played, they really didn't have an option behind that line. And if you can only win one of every third shift, one of every 2.5 shifts, it's difficult to win the series. And they just couldn't score enough to outscore the entire Avalanche team in the end.
The Cirelli injury to me was one of the biggest defining moments because I have been so impressed with what he did the previous three series. He was the guy that shut everybody down. It was impossible to play against them. That line was obviously, I think, extremely underrated. When you got to watch how the defensive matchups, especially when you're at home against the Tampa Bay Lightning, where John Cooper had the opportunity to put who he wanted on, that was really difficult to overcome. For him to have not been hit at full strength, healthy, with a Braden Point situation as well, that leaves that question mark of what would have happened if you had healthier bodies. But Cirelli for sure is something that Tampa will probably look back on and say, well, we were one player short of pushing this to seven games, which could have been a thing.
Yeah, and they beat the Florida Panthers, who won the President's Trophy, without Braden Point. Beat the New York Rangers without Braden Point. Like, they were able to survive a huge, huge loss, and still they played at the very top end. They threatened to beat Colorado. They were right in that. There was no question that this was an even series or close to, even still with the disadvantages that the Tampa Bay Lightning were dealing with. Like, Tampa is still obviously an unbelievable hockey team, but I don't think they're going away. And I think they know that they're not going away. The way that John Cooper was so adamant that they'll be back, they are the team that understands this game, the postseason game, more than any other. They just understand how to get it done. And I respect the fact that Colorado won its way as well. Like, they won the way that they play hockey. Tampa won the way that it's, you know, maybe the most advantageous to play at this level because they just understand playoff hockey. But I just think these are two special teams, and it's great that they met in the Stanley Cup final because rarely do we see best on best in the Stanley Cup final, and that's exactly what we got here. Two unique teams doing it their way.
Probably one of the best Stanley Cup finals I can remember in recent history. Yeah, two of the best going at it, exchanging blows, having you know, incredible storylines such as Nazem Kadri, which is obviously something last night that was, I think that a lot of people felt so much joy for Kadri, especially myself, to see him hoist that cup. Got emotional. His family out on the ice afterwards. It was just really special to see. Whether you want him to be in a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey or not, or you have bitter feelings about that, I don't think you can look at that and not feel some joy for him, especially what he overcame with the injury and some of the off-ice personal stuff that happened. Just incredible to see. He was obviously a big storyline with the injury. He had probably the best post-game quote that we'll see in, I don't know, ages. And so we got to play that now and talk about who that's a shot at.
You have a lot of fans down in Southern Ontario, London, of course, Toronto, etc. What do you want to say to all those fans out there that have stuck with you and wanted to see you have this moment?
I love you guys. I love you guys. That's all there is to be said. I mean, I've had supporters in my corner from day one, never wavered. And, you know, for everyone that thought I was a liability in the playoffs, you can kiss my ass.
That's awesome.
Unbelievable.
It's so awesome. Good. Good for him.
That was a legit Conor McGregor moment.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
When he mic stepped drop. Up to the mic, I don't know. Is he beat Nate Diaz? Not that it matters. But he comes up and he says, I'd like to apologize to absolutely nobody. And like, that is exactly what Kadri did, because he's starting out saying nothing but love. Like, I love everybody that has supported me back home. But for those who thought I was a liability. And I think it's pretty clear that only a few people really thought that Nazem Kadri was a liability and they belonged to Maple Leafs management. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He earned the right to say that, because he, you know, he put himself in the position that he was in. So he's put himself in bad spots. He's been put in bad spots in his career. And that's why everyone cheers for Nazem Kadri, I think, because he's overcome some things. But the fact that he was able to not just be on a Stanley Cup winning team, but contribute mightily to a Stanley Cup winning team. Of course, his goal in game four really put the Avalanche in the driver's seat. Good on him. I respect that so much. We want players to have personality. I love that clapback. If you walk it, you can talk it.
Oh, iconic. And I think seeing Leafs Twitter appreciate that and say, hell yeah, Nas, you talk that talk. I loved it. I think that if you're waking up and you're Leafs management, you're hearing that, I wonder how that feels.
Got to chew on it. Yeah, you got to chew on it.
You got to take that one to the chin.
That's been one that they've been chewing on for a while. But I don't think there was any second doubt that they wanted to move on from that relationship. It made some sense from a roster building standpoint because they just brought John Tavares in. But that has proven to be probably the worst move of the current era of the Maple Leafs. Kadri's a special player. He's going to make a ton of money. Now he's a Stanley Cup champion. And I talked about chills when watching players lift the Stanley Cup. That was the strongest one for me. And his cup hoist was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Like, some of them are better than others, and his was tremendous. I mean, Nazem Kadri was full value last night. It was awesome.
The cup hoist, you can't get enough of that view, that shot. But there was an iconic moment where the cup hit the ice, sliding into the post-game photo. Yeah, a little bit of a tumble, and it gets absolutely dented into a straight line at one point. And the circular cup should never have a straight line on it. And the keeper of the cup had some comments. We got that audio clip, too.
Hey, guys, we're here at the Amalie Arena. The Avalanche just won the cup. I don't even know if they had it 5 minutes, and there's a dent at the bottom already, right in the middle of the team photo. But you know what? It's the third time the Avalanche have won it. I guess we have a little chat with them soon, and we'll go through the process of how we're going to prepare it and that. But the Stanley Cup tour will go on.
Do you know if it's how many times it's been dented before?
Well, I guess it's a new record today. It's 5 minutes into the presentation. it's happened. So it's the first time it's ever happened on the ice. More importantly, hopefully that's the only damaged part that happens this summer on it. It's going to be a great tour.
He sounds a little annoyed.
Yeah, he's like, I got to go buff that out. And his job, honestly, I want to talk to him one day. We should get producer Danielle to get us the keeper of the cup one day this summer. Post, like, you know, right in the middle of the media tour. If I don't know if he does media. I don't know this guy's life, though. What?
Just a ridiculous job, honestly.
What a ridiculous job. And apparently he just stumbled upon it. Like, I'll one day do some research, but... It's one of a kind job. But I want, obviously, we'll talk so much this summer. It'll probably be the only thing happening for a little while. It's like, what happens with the Stanley Cup run? Who's putting what in it? Tonight, I'm sure, or today, we're going to find more videos of that post-game celebration. But the cup is dented. It's fine.
Yeah, Nicholas Obey-Kubel just sliding into the photo. And I mean,
of all guys, too. Like, he was the last one to lift it, I think.
Not a single drink consumed.
No.
It just happens. But that's what I actually love that about the Stanley Cup, too. It's like this real prestigious thing. It's like glistening. It's like so much history. All these names on it that, you know, detail hockey history on the actual Stanley Cup. But once it's actually in the hands of the players, it's like
chaos.
It can
do whatever.
It can basically disintegrate, and it's fine. Like it changes once it's in the hands of the players, and it's okay. Even though the cup keeper kind of sounded a little.
I'm sure he knows how to fix it up. Actually, they had at the beginning of the Stanley Cup playoffs, they brought the real Stanley Cup here to Sportsnet, and we got a chance to see it. I did touch it, and everybody thinks that that's why the Maple Leafs lost. So if you're in that camp, I don't know what to tell you, but
well, the Avalanche reporter I had on my show touched it at the party.
Okay, well,
so I think it's okay.
All right,
but I mean, Leafs curses maybe a little different.
So I got a chance to see it up close and personal, and it lives up to the hype. There's actually, I didn't know this, but inside the bowl part, there's names in there, and apparently they have to take a ring off like every couple of years or else they'd be like, you know, 20 feet tall. It was just really cool to see it. Something obviously that I've watched my whole life to see it up close. But there were so many, that guy was there, the keeper of the cup. Mm-hmm. And there was so many rules just to like, we were allowed to touch it. Obviously you weren't allowed to do much else. I wanted to take some funny content, which we were there to do. There was a lot of rules. Like I wanted to put some Miss Vicky's chips, open the bag. We just put the bag in the top of the chip, in top of the whatever you call it, the bowl.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to use any props. You just had to let it shine by itself.
I think you got to earn that right.
Yeah.
I'm a little uneasy with touching it too.
Really,
I haven't been in its presence in a long, long time.
It's pretty cool.
But I don't know. I don't know if I would touch it. I'm not sure what I would do. But I think it was Kale McCarr who was asked by ESPN's Emily Kaplan about what he wanted to put into it. And, you know, like, he was, like, he just said, like, I want to take a photo with the boys, which is, like, a very wholesome Kale McCarr thing. But I would have loved if he just, like, threw down the gauntlet and is, like, I would love to chug a beer out of that thing or something
like
that.
He's just so, like, sometimes you forget that he's, like, drinking age. His little rosy cheeks.
Barely. I mean, he's over the limit for sure. Sometimes there's issues.
Mm-hmm.
But
kids
under 21 can win it. But I don't think there's anyone on the Avalanche who would qualify.
I keep thinking that he's the youngest in the league because he's so good and so young. I thought a good text line question for today is: what would you put in the Stanley Cup if you had your day with the cup? What would you do with it? I can't wait to see those stories. I know that Nathan McKinnon's is going to be super special. He's going to have some celebrity appearances. Can't wait to see.
He better lean into the chickpea pasta. There better be chickpea pasta in the Stanley Cup this summer.
No carbs allowed in that day, but it'd be great. I don't know what I would do. Obviously, you know, I'm a big chip lover, but I don't think I would waste my opportunity just putting some chips in there. What think about it. Yeah, text in 590-590 what you think, your thoughts on what you do with the cup. You had your day. I don't know. I'll brainstorm throughout the rest of the day. We're going to keep talking, obviously, about the Stanley Cup, Colorado Avalanche. What's next? We got Luke Fox at 7. We're going to talk to Jason York, former NHL defenseman, current Sportsnet analyst at 8. And, you know, for the rest of the week and onwards, we'll be living this up. But we got to touch on the Toronto Blue Jays before we get into the A-list. Probably the most important Blue Jays week ahead. They got the Red Sox and the Rays. They're about to play 8 games in 7 days. A rare home doubleheader, which obviously doesn't happen much when you got the dome, but they had that one rain and out. So you're going to see a doubleheader on Saturday, which would be pretty cool. A very long day for the guys. But this series versus the Red Sox to start, obviously incredibly important. The last time they played the Red Sox a while ago was at Fenway. They actually won 3 out of 4. But Red Sox are a completely different team since then. They've gone 34-19, including a 19-4 June so far. Like, they are absolutely red hot. So is the rest of their division. You got the Yankees, basically the best team in baseball. They just won their 10th walk-off of the season.
Yep.
The Rays just moved into a tie with the Jays for third in the AL East. This could be that stretch that we look back on in October with 8 losses in the last 12 games as something that might be a point that if the Jays aren't happy with where they are, we look back at this stretch and say, well, we're not surprised. You went 8-12 or 8 losses in 12 games. Your pitching is the biggest conversation in baseball right now. It's been a tough stretch. They really need to turn it around this homestand with two of their biggest division rivals coming.
Yeah, I don't know if the games, well, they don't. The games against Boston mean more than Tampa this weekend. But if they did, at least the pitching has lined up for this series against Boston. Because I think the Red Sox will avoid both Berríos and Kikuchi, who have been basically a black hole. Like we talk about turning over the lineup in baseball, turning over the rotation has been a very, very big problem for the Blue Jays with Kikuchi and Berríos struggling in Milwaukee, but at least it will be the top three, or at least the top three right now against Boston in what is a key series, of course. But then there's no really hiding the fact that they have two of their five starting pitchers struggling in a big, 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 big way because, hey, guess what? It's Tampa this weekend, and those games are big as well. And you have to find some sort of solution for what is a pitching staff that is undoing itself with the, like, if they make progress with the guys who are going to go against the Red Sox this week, it can be lost with those next two starts. It's a massive issue right now, and all the focus is on Pete Walker and that staff because they've got to figure out a way how to get some innings out of those guys, or they're just going to be in this process of a couple steps forward, a couple steps back, and that's not good enough, as you mentioned, in the American League East.
We have Tim Leeper also today. We're going to get lots of insight on, like, what's it like in that locker room when you know that pitching is the biggest conversation point. Charlie Montoyo after the game saying, the reason we're losing is our pitching. Like, that's blunt as can be. Like, we can't have these performances from Kikuchi, especially Berríos, just not looking like himself whatsoever. It's a black hole, as you put it right.
And I don't think there's a coincidence. Like, listen, baseball is everything happens independent of one of each other. Every event happens independent of each other. But I don't think there's a coincidence that Alejandro Kirk hits a 3-run shot in the first inning, and then Berríos allows eight runs before getting 4 outs, and then the Jays do not score another run. Like, it is deflating. It has to impact what's happening in that clubhouse. And the last game out, another loss to the Brewers, is a perfect example of that.
So the pitching lineup, we have Gausman, Stripling, and Manoah, as you mentioned. The last 10 games, the Jays have only had 3 quality starts from Gausman, Stripling, and Manoah only. So great lineup to start, but that means Manoah is only going to play one game in the next homestand.
The 2 series, yeah.
And that's really tough, as he's the guy you have the most confidence in, followed by probably Gausman and then Stripling. So that Rays series, I know, I don't want to get too ahead of myself. It's either going to be the turning point for the Toronto Blue Jays to finally get some confidence in those guys that need it to have, I don't even know who's pitching the second game. Actually.
Now, because there's a doubleheader, there might have to be some adjustment,
some
right,
random
to the rotation, which is maybe what they need.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe they need to introduce someone new into this rotation, push one of these. Obviously, Berríos is going to keep going, but maybe Kikuchi just missing a start or two isn't the worst thing in the world. But the problem with what the Jays are dealing with right now is that they don't have the pitching in the bullpen to cover off for this. I mean, they're using their long guy in the rotation, and he's crucial to the rotation right now in Ross Stripling. They just are running out of bodies, and if your pitching continues to perform at the rate it is, only lasting 2 innings, you just continuously tax your bullpen, and you're putting everyone in a bad situation. They have to find a way to get innings out of their starting pitchers, the first and the fifth in particular, if you're looking at the way that they started the season.
It certainly feels like there's also a lot of pressure on the Blue Jays front office to make a move and not wait to the trade deadline, obviously. It just, having no confidence in the bottom end of your rotation is not a great thing. Knowing that there are moves to be made and you just seem to be waiting on it, not a great feeling as well. I think JD's brought that stat up quite a while, that June 29th was when they made their initial trade last year. We're 2 days away from that being June 29th as well. But I just feel like if you're not already lining that up for this week and beyond, it's not a great feeling as a fan to think that there's no confidence level in who's going to be starting past that top three. Yeah, as I said, we're going to talk lots of hockey today. We got a couple of texts in the text line. Good morning. Nice to see Kadri win the cup. He was a playoff liability, got traded, matured, and excelled. Jeff in Oakville. Sometimes that changes scenery. Someone having faith in you, giving you an opportunity outside of where you've had some difficulties can be the reason that you do succeed.
Yeah, sometimes you need your eyes open too. Like if you were literally given up on, and you probably have to change your ways, even though he didn't immediately change his ways, being suspended for the last Colorado Stanley Cup playoff run. So, yeah, I mean, I do believe in that, but like I think you should believe in your people too. You should believe in your ability to develop and make sure that your employees become better humans and more mature in their craft. And I think that remains, you know, we could go back and forth on this all day, whether they shouldn't have or should have. I think most people are on the shouldn't have column, but you got to, exactly what I said off the top. You want patience. You have to show patience. They failed to show patience with Nazem Kadri, and of course, this is what happened.
Well, we're going to take a break and talk about the A-list after this, but keep your texts coming, 590-590. We're going to have lots of post-Stanley Cup reactions. As I said, Luke Fox at 7. The guy behind the scenes.
On the ice.
I'm hoping that he has some fun stories of what we didn't hear or see so far. But on the A-list, we got a giraffe, pizza, and a Canadian basketball star taking a shot at LeBron James.
Sounds delightful.
That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Sports on 590, The Fan.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ailish and Justin Cuthbert today filling in for JD. The night after the Stanley Cup was awarded, Stanley Cup hangover, I'm sure there'll be a couple of those today. Not us. I mean, we were up pretty late covering it, up early morning for you in the studio, so a little bit less sleep, but definitely worth it to see those images.
Yeah, just a sleep deprivation hangover.
Yeah.
Talking to Luke Fox later, maybe there's a bit of both there.
I wonder if they
we'll see.
He's probably busy.
Lots to do.
You got to celebrate your season. I actually want, like, we should give a shout out to all of Sportsnet on-air talent, behind the scenes writers that covered this entire playoff run and the entire season. Thought we did a stellar job, and I'm not biased.
No, it's, I mean, it's a long grind too. Like we're flirting with July here, and we're still
crazy.
Going. Of course, the NHL calendar will go back to normal, but like it's gonna be a short summer for everyone. And that 2 month grind of covering the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's, you know, we shouldn't complain because it's pretty nice to be able to talk about sports, write about sports for a living. But it can have its toll.
Yeah, some well-deserved vacations coming up. So enjoy it while you can because you're back in 106 days
shorter.
So, yeah, congrats to all the Sportsnet team that did a great job covering it. You're all A-listers, but this is what is on the A-list today.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
I did some investigative journalism. I was just telling you during the break to get an inside scoop on this next story. It was an awesome thing to stumble upon on Twitter. Sometimes there's just like the social media world can do some good things. This is one of them. So. Massive bench clearing brawl Sunday between the Angels and the Mariners. I'm sure you saw this video circulating. It wasn't just one of those bench brawls that, you know, people push each other and it's over. This was like an actual fight, like an epic fight. Punches thrown. I think 8 people ejected. There's going to be suspensions.
Mm-hmm.
All hell really broke loose. Jesse Winker was hit by a pitch. That's how it all started. A girl named Sophie Ballgame on Twitter, S-O-F-I-E. Had this incredible thread that went viral. So she is obviously a fan of Jesse Winker. She decided once he was ejected from the game to order a pizza for him on DoorDash from Mountain Mike's in Anaheim. On the instructions, because you know you can say, hey, this is what I need you to do, she writes, please deliver this to the visitor's clubhouse for Jesse Winker. She continues with, I think it's like an 8 or 10 thread tweet where she's giving updates. It's going viral. Like hundreds of people are retweeting it. So there's people engaged in this live while it's happening. Next screenshots, the pizza en route. You can follow the delivery man named Simranjeet. He's on his way. Mm-hmm. You're following him. Hundreds of people saying, hey, give us updates, whatever. So he gets there. He delivers the pizza successfully. People are saying, hey, I would love to give him a tip. Like, you know, good for him. So she asked for his Venmo. And if you're not American, it's just like a way to send money without doing like indirect e-transfer. I had it at university. It was the best thing ever. Canada needs to get Venmo. Side note. So
why don't we have Venmo?
I don't know. It's so this is the problem.
I can't even figure out how to take off the password thing on my, like, I still need to, I'm requesting, like, it's, it makes
on
no
your
sense. Anyway,
interact, I'll show you during the break how to say, like, don't need a code word or whatever. So he sends a message to her. Hey, your pizza's delivered. She says, can you give me your Venmo information? Some people want to send you tips. So this is where I did some investigative journalism. It was blowing up on Twitter, and I wanted to see, like, how many people had given him money. But as a Canadian, you can't, like, log into Venmo. Okay. I was going to make an account because you can see, hey,
X. You can see how much people are sending
to people?
Sometimes
you can see if they're your friend. I remember in college. But you can see, like, Cuthbert sent a tip. But it might not say, but it'll say, like, your message you write.
Okay.
So I asked Sophie, I DM'd her, and I said, hey, I just want to ask you a question. She was so nice. She responds. She goes, I took a look for you at how many people. She said hundreds of people had been sending him tips. Mm-hmm. And I saw some screenshots between $5, $50 to him. Wonderful messages. So he sends her a message saying, I'm speechless right now. My wife and myself are so happy for all you did for us. I feel so blessed. Thank you very much. Jesse Winker sends her a message saying, I got the pizza. I love it. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. So if you want to also add to the tip, maybe you have Venmo, you're listening from the States, you go on Sophie, at Sophie Ballgame, S-O-F-I-E, and you can add a tip on this entire story. But I just thought it was really cool to see social media come together for something good.
I was convinced the extent of your investigative journalism was going to be that I just followed this thread.
I actually messaged the girl.
It's all laid out for you. What are you talking about, investigative journalism?
No, I wanted to know how much.
So you did come through with that.
This is at 8:30 last night. She said, there have been hundreds of tips so far. I can't see the amounts. And I said, I really appreciate just some context because it could have been like 20 people, but it was this thread really blew up. So.
No, I mean, when something goes viral, the Venmo potential is definitely there. I'm sure it's been a pretty good last 24 hours for that Uber Eats driver.
Mm-hmm. DoorDash.
DoorDash, sorry. Either way.
Beautiful.
It's great, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, like, it's as you mentioned, social media can do some great things, and that's awesome. I think that's a really great story. I do take one issue with the fact that Jesse Winker was getting a pizza, though. Because he kind of started all.
Yeah,
did he
well,
not?
She's clearly a
so
fan of
So she's a
him.
Fan of Jesse Winker, and clearly there are many fans of Jesse Winker. But that brawl does not start without,
without him.
Jesse Winker.
He goes sprinting towards the dugout, and he lays a couple punches.
He was the one hit by the pitch. He was angry. Someone, I think, must have yelled at him or set him off after
happened.
Because he was kind of, he was mad, but he was okay before he mm-hmm. looked over at the mm-hmm. Angels dugout, and then the melee ensued. But yeah, I mean, if there's anything that I would pick apart from that, it's the fact that, I don't know if Jesse Winker really deserved it.
Yeah,
pizza.
Whatever. He flips double bird on his way out to the
stand. This guy's double birding the fans, and then
Sophie doesn't care.
He's the biggest fan.
He's
the heartwarming story of the sports world yesterday.
Okay, so another one here. So the Ole Miss Rebels won the College Baseball World Series yesterday. First ever national championship. Obviously, I love college sports. This is always a fun one. But to get there, a very special thing happened, which becomes the second storyline of their tournament. 21-year-old pitcher Dylan DeLucia wasn't even in the rotation after the first half of the season. He becomes the ace who delivers the best game in Ole Miss history. He throws 114 pitches, a complete game shutout with 7 strikeouts in the game
to send
them to the finals. Is he ready for the Blue Jays? Can we get this guy? Can we get this guy up? All of this is said to be inspired by a trip that the team took during the tournament. So they had a much-deserved day off on their way to becoming national champions. And they went to the zoo, the Omaha Zoo. This guy's almost 22 years old, and never in his life had he seen a giraffe. Okay? Which is just like a strange thing to say, but he had never seen a giraffe. He was really excited to see a giraffe. A giraffe. It's hard to say. Giraffe.
Okay, you teased the A-list, and I thought you said draft, but
giraffe.
I was like, that sound like giraffe?
Giraffe. If you say it too fast, it's
actually
giraffe,
which is hilarious.
Okay, so he had never seen a giraffe. He goes with his team. quote, Dylan DeLucia spent his day off at the zoo. He got to feed the giraffes. He got all excited. He's never seen one. Are there magic powers in the giraffes at the Omaha Zoo? Some are saying.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's
possible. I might have to contact the zoo next.
I mean, the only really giraffe sports context that we really have here in Toronto is, you know, Pierre Engvall's got the giraffe moniker, and he's got some special powers sometimes.
Right. So there might be something.
So maybe there's something there, but maybe that's what, that's a curse breaker. Maybe Pierre Engvall feeding actual giraffes.
At Toronto Zoo, are you listening?
At the Toronto Zoo can really establish some karmic forces.
Giraffe's a mystical creature. I've seen them before, obviously, but only at the zoo. I can't think of any, if I've been on any trips. Actually, I went to Ghana once, and I was fortunate to see a real life.
There you go.
I just remember that.
How did you forget that?
I forgot that I went to Ghana.
You've had more giraffe experience than pretty much anyone.
Wow. Maybe where's the curse that's broken for me? Has anything positive happened in my life since then?
I mean, I was going to say that's been the difference for you.
This giraffe has been having a strong effect on you and your life. I think for me, the best thing to see at the zoo are pandas. I remember going when the baby pandas at the Toronto Zoo were born, and it was a absolute fiasco. The line was like 2 hours long to see the baby pandas, but they're so cute.
The zoo's depressing, man.
I know. I'm not a fan of the zoo. I'm not coming on here to be a zoo fan. I'd like to strongly say that I'm against the zoo.
Yeah, there could be some hardcore zoo people.
I want to make sure I'm very clear.
I don't want to go too hard because I don't really know much about it.
Or Marine Land.
But yeah, Marine Land. I mean,
not a fan, guys.
No, let's not do that. It just feels a little dirty at the zoo.
A little.
Not because it's dirty, because they should be where they should be.
Yeah. I don't want to see polar bears in downtown Toronto in the blazing sun. Speaking of, quick update on the heat, guys, I got my air conditioning fixed. It is probably the best moment of my year.
Which is hilarious, too, because it's getting chillier over the next couple days.
I don't care. I had it so low last night. I was in pants, a hoodie. I could have put a toque on at that point. It's like I'm getting the most out of it. I'm as low as the thermostat goes. It's going to be there for the next couple weeks.
I can't say this is a theme on the show because I've only been on the show a few times. But I was here for you a couple months ago, my furnace went out twice. Like I was literally without furnace, without heat for the majority of the 3 weeks I was on with JD and Blake. So something, you know, giraffes,
we need
like
to see
horses,
a giraffe.
things are unexplainable right now in the world. God. And I think something about HVAC, heat and cooling is impacting the show. Yes. There's something, some curse needs to be broken in that regard. It was just you getting your AC fixed.
Maybe. I just want to thank everyone for the support over the last month, 32 days that I had to go without.
That's rough.
Air conditioning, but that we made it. Rough. People can do hard things. Okay, last one. Benedict Mathurin, 20-year-old Canadian basketball player, was drafted 6th overall for the Pacers. We all know that. He's been an NBA player for just a few days. He's already calling out LeBron James, okay? I don't know about this. He says in the Washington Post, quote, before slipping off to his hotel room to make his final preparations for the draft, Mathurin said that there was one test, maybe the biggest of all, that he was particularly looking forward to as a rookie. The first game against the Lakers and star LeBron James. A lot of people say he's great, Mathurin said. I want to see how great he is. I don't think anybody is better than me. He's going to have to show me he's better than me.
Oof.
I don't know. I think that's going to be bad, bad. One of those like hot takes, cold takes exposed when this guy gets just dominated by LeBron James. Like some people say that he's great. Yeah, some. Maybe the whole world.
We might have seen already the best of LeBron James, but at least we know there's going to be one more like legendary performance because he's not going to take too kindly, I don't think, to this. Yeah, we're going to see a big time LeBron. If you're looking, like, you got to remember this for the Wake and Rake in whatever, 4 months' time, the first time.
Yes,
that the Lakers and
this.
Pacers do battle
LeBron's
because
going on for 40.
LeBron overs across the board. He's not going to take kindly to this. And I like it, though. I mean, we talked about Canadians like having a little bit more oomph, a little bit more pride, a little bit more
cockiness, drafted,
sort of, you know, in our. Like collection of athletes, we're a little bit more sure of ourselves, I think, as a nation and a sporting nation, per se. And I think Mathurin might be taking it a little bit too far, but it's nice to see athletes from Canada with tons of confidence.
He's believing in himself. He's betting on himself.
Yeah.
Hopefully he proves that this season. I already got a text in 590 from a zoo lover.
Okay.
Hey, don't trash the zoo or compare it to Marine World. Zoos are critical for the research of endangered species, and many of the animals were rehabbed and unable to be released to the wild.
I'm sure there are great things that come of it, because otherwise there would be protesters all the time knocking on the door. Like, there has to be some sort of regulation, but still
overwhelmingly,
uneasy.
I still don't feel great about it. This person must work for the zoo.
You could have those like zoos, and you could do that. You could do that work in their habitat, couldn't you? I don't know. Let's get off zoos.
Yeah. I know about zoos. Maybe the Stanley Cup will go to a zoo this summer. Probably not. But maybe it'll go to a country or somewhere where giraffes are. There giraffes in the United States?
Natural? I don't think so.
Other zoos.
I don't think so.
I bet Luke Fox has some great stories to tell us after the break. He was there for the Stanley Cup hoisting. The after parties. Hopefully he's ready to spill the tea. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Cuthbert and Ailish this morning.